And thank you for coming out in this rainy weather to join us on a very special Labor Day Sunday, a time when we honor the American worker by giving ourselves a day off, which is a really good idea. And we've had such an exciting week here at Unity Renaissance. We had a fantastic coming together Thursday night to rejoice in this community and look ahead to the future. And a wonderful celebration on Friday of 50 years of marriage for two of our congregants, Mel and Sandy Eckert, and just an explosion of love. Felt so great. And today is just a continuation of that love that we all feel when we come together. As we connect with the heart of who we are, we're reminded that we are holding a higher vision for ourselves, for our community, for this church, for our world. Deep within, we carry this vision with us for, together, a spiritually awakened world, living in peace, love, and joy. And we do our part toward achieving that vision through our mission, which is, we transform lives that transform the world. Let's begin our time together this morning in prayer. I invite you to take a deep breath in, close your eyes if that's comfortable to you, and just release, letting go of your busy morning, your hurrying to get here. Just let go and let God. Feel this beautiful presence of spirit all around us, moving through us. Truly, this is the essence of our being. It is the source of our light. As we come together, we share our light, and together we create a community that lights up the world. On this day, we feel the great love that unites us. We feel our oneness with spirit and with each other. We rejoice in this community and the insights we experience every day. And we serve it all up to the glory of God. And so it is, and so we let it be. Amen. Well, in 1919, Somerset Maugham wrote a book called The Moon and Sixpence. Anybody ever read it? Really? Okay. Well, it was based on the life of artist Paul Gauguin. And the main character in this story is named Charles Strickland, even though the plot is basically Gauguin's life. Well, it starts out, and he is a very well-off, middle-class, respected stockbroker with a wife and children. And from the outside, everything seems to be just great. But on the inside, our hero is in turmoil. He's in turmoil because he is plagued by a growing and relentless urge to become an artist. He tries to deny it and ignore it, but it just won't let him go. Finally, he feels that he simply must paint. He can't not paint. And so he leaves his job as a stockbroker, he leaves his family, and he sets off for Paris. Well, wouldn't you know, as soon as he gets to Paris, it turns out that the economy goes south and the market for art completely bottoms out. So before long, he's living in poverty, he's ill, and destitute. Nevertheless, because he is so driven and so passionate about what he's meant to do, he carries on. He befriends other artists, he begins studying under them, he works very hard, and eventually he becomes a successful artist. Well, having really abandoned his wife and family, he began traveling around the world and eventually landed in Tahiti. And in Tahiti, he married a Tahitian woman, and they lived together in a bamboo hut where he painted beautiful paintings of island life till the end of his days. If any of you are familiar with Paul Gauguin, you know that he did indeed eventually go to Tahiti And today he is really world famous, in particular, for his paintings of Tahitian life like this one. You may have mixed feelings, however, about his decision to leave a perfectly respectable job and abandon his family. On the one hand, you may think, well, that was very courageous. Or you may think that was very selfish and irresponsible. But you know, it really doesn't matter whether we would have made the same choices as him or not. Because his experience, the core of his experience, strikes a chord within most of us. Most of us at some time or another have felt a stirring within, a sort of divine discontent. There was a longing to give more of ourselves to the world, to be who we truly are, and bring it all and express it. Maybe we felt too confined by an office job and felt that we wanted to be out in the world more. Maybe we wanted to sing or teach or write or heal. And yet the idea of making a change from what we had always done to that was too frightening. In some cases, we may have gotten a very clear call to make a career change, but we ignored it. Most ministers are actually very surprised when they get their call to ministry and tend to want to deny it. As our own wonderful Cordy Mack, who is now in ministerial school, says, "When I first got the call that I was supposed to be a minister, my response was, 'Who, me?' Which is really pretty much how it feels when we're called. But you know, spirit is very persistent and will not be denied. And if there's a message that we're supposed to receive, it will intensify until we listen. We may first get the message and think to ourselves, kind of like Cordy did, 'Oh, I could never do that.' But then as we let it steep a little bit within us, we start thinking, well, you know, maybe I could do that. Over time, it progresses to, I think I might like to do that. And eventually, I would love to do that. And the sooner, the better. When we feel that we must do what we're called to do, that we can't not do it, we're ready to leave our nets. We're ready to let go of the security blanket of what we've always done, who we've always been, the priorities we've always set for ourselves, and step into a new dimension of life. I believe that's exactly how it was for Simon, who became Peter, and his brother Andrew, as they cast out their nets one day for fishing, and Jesus came walking along the Sea of Galilee and essentially said to them, "Leave your nets and follow me." And very soon after that, he said the same thing to James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Well, evidently, it really resonated deeply with each of these men because they did exactly what Jesus said. They got up, they left their nets, and even left their families, and they followed him. Now, we don't know if this story literally happened. On the one hand, it can seem like a stretch that in one moment you would be fishing as you normally do for your livelihood and to feed your family, and in the next moment you suddenly decide to chuck it all and get up and go follow a perfect stranger. On the other hand, it may be that Jesus had such power in his presence and his authority that it was irresistible. You know, we really don't know. But whether this story literally happened or not, it's still metaphysically true. It tells us that we may be going along in our usual life doing what we typically do, when suddenly we hear a call from higher consciousness, we receive a message. And it says to us, Wake up. There's more to you than this. There's more to life than this. You're here not only to make a living, but to make a life. Leave your nets, if necessary, and follow your heart. Follow the voice, the guidance of the Christ presence in you, which often speaks to us through our heart. And I believe that's how the disciples heard Jesus' call. They heard it in their heart, and they responded from there. It was irresistible. Well, quite often we're not as good as listening to our heart as that. We tend to tune it out, and we think that our mind is supposed to be in charge. So we want to think things out rationally. You know, okay, let me list out the pros and cons here. Let me just think about this. Think. Can you imagine if the disciples had done that, or if Paul Gauguin or anybody else had done that? The heart is a terrible master, but a brilliant slave. In other words, I'm sorry, I meant the mind. Did I say the heart? I meant the mind, excuse me. The mind is a terrible master, but a brilliant slave. Our mind serves us best when it's following the guidance of our heart. So think about it for a moment. Have you ever tried to talk yourself into something that you knew in your heart wasn't right for you? Have you ever tried to talk yourself out of something that was your heart's desire, that you wanted more than anything? It's kind of a losing battle, isn't it? Because the mind can't ultimately trump the heart. It can't deny our truth, and our truth comes from here. And so in the case of Paul Gauguin, he couldn't talk himself out. He couldn't talk himself into remaining as a stockbroker, because it just wasn't in his heart. It wasn't who he was anymore. Most of us at some time or another in our working life have felt this tug of head and heart, what decision to make, where to go, what to do. And I've certainly experienced that in my own career. As I've mentioned previously, before I became a minister, I worked in corporate communications for some 30-plus years. And I started out as a newspaper reporter, then I moved into a communications specialist, did some internal PR work, became a manager, and eventually an executive. And for a very long time, I loved what I did. I loved it. I loved sharing information so people would know what was going on, and they would feel respected and included and engaged. And I loved communicating big ideas so that people could understand them and get behind them, get involved with them. So it was very satisfying for many years, but then it reached a point where it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for me to express who I was. I began to feel like I was in a little bit of a box. That feeling of there's more to me than this. I can only give in this job from my head and not enough for me from my heart. And so the turning point came for me, as I believe I've mentioned before, in a corporate performance review when I was told that I was too compassionate. That was a wake-up call. That prompted some serious reassessment. Too compassionate. Are you kidding me? It actually catapulted me out of corporate life and into ministry. And I have been so grateful for that decision. You know, it was scary at first, very scary. Leave something you know you're good at. You've done it for 30 plus years. You're stepping into the unknown. But I was so led by what my heart was telling me that it helped me overcome the fear, and pretty soon I felt liberated and exhilarated. I moved from Portland to Kansas City with no job, no income, no idea how I'd ever pay for ministerial school or when or if I would get in, and none of that mattered because I knew it was what my heart was telling me. And so I have given thanks now that I'm in a profession where not only do I get to do what I love, but I get to love. And even though not every manager would give you high marks for that, it's what I want to be doing. I've realized since then that actually, in its true sense, every type of work is an expression of love. When you get from a spiritual perspective, work is really a giving from the heart. Cahil Gibran said, "Work is love made visible." And so it doesn't really matter what our work is. It doesn't matter whether we perform surgery or deliver cars or teach children how to express themselves creatively or drive a bus or empty waste baskets, start a soup kitchen, or write the great American novel. Whatever it is, we're here to give it with love. And when we do that, it feels so good. In her classic book, Return to Love, Marianne Williamson says, "No matter what form our job or activity takes, the content is the same. We are here to minister to human hearts." Isn't that beautiful? You know, there are actually some companies that have now integrated this idea of love into their company mission statement. And so, as you probably know, Southwest Airlines is the Love Airlines. And when we lived in Portland, Oregon, there was a fast food chain named called Burgerville. Anybody heard of Burgerville? Yeah, it's great, isn't it? And Burgerville, their company mission statement is serve with love. So lovely, isn't it? And on the sign, I remember as we go through the drive-through, it says our secret ingredient is love. We add it to everything we do, and we never run out. You know, I loved that slogan almost as much as I loved their sweet potato fries. When we serve with love, it isn't a human being necessarily giving to a human being. It's a Christ presence in us, giving to the Christ presence in another. When we're doing work that speaks to our heart and we give from our heart, we're coming from the highest aspect of who we are and we're connecting with the highest aspect of the other. And it feels uplifting, joyful. As Marianne Williamson says, we are here to give love and spread joy. Now, does that mean that you should stay in work that doesn't feel right to you? Well, no. In my view, you find what you love, and then you do it with love. You follow the calling of your own heart, and that may mean at some point that you leave your nets, that you let go of perhaps what you have falsely worshipped, the false gods you have worshipped. Maybe it's material wealth or power, prestige or status, whatever it is. Do you recognize that isn't really what you're all about? And you're willing to step forward into what you're being called to do. So obviously that requires some courage and it requires faith. But the good news is nobody's going to force you before you're ready. So you can wait until the call feels like what you know you want to do or what you must do. And in his book, Leave Your Nets, Christian mystic Joel Goldsmith advises, decide within yourself that you're either going to feel the love and confidence in a divine power within you and be willing with faith to prove it and see it come into expression, or that you're going to leave it for a season and go back to it again at another time when something arises in your life to renew or bring about a resurgence of faith. You get to listen and follow. And when that call comes to you and resonates in your own heart, you will have all the faith that you need to make it happen. Jesus had it, the disciples had it, Paul Gauguin had it, I have it, and you have it. All the faith that you need. It will steer you into your dream. You know, Somerset Maugham never explained why he called his book the moon, and sixpence. But it was found that he had written a letter to a friend at one point, and in that letter he had said, "If you look on the ground in search of a sixpence, you don't look up, and so miss the moon." What it says to me is if we're too focused on this material realm, making money, getting by, doing what we do, and getting caught up in that realm of reality, we miss the moon. We miss the glory of God wanting to express through us in a big, big way. You know, the master teacher told us, "I came that they may have life and have life abundantly." We are meant to live abundantly, not in a tiny little box, not cutting off part of who we are. It may mean letting go of what no longer serves us. But you know, what has kept us safe may also keep us small. So this is our opportunity, not to force a decision, but to stay open and to listen. And when it resonates in our heart, to follow. As we tune in to the I am within, the Christ presence in us, as we follow the call of our own heart, and then once we are giving in the role we've decided, give with love, we discover the glory of God and the great fullness of abundant life. Let's turn now to our meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in. Close your eyes and release. And just feel a great sense of peace moving from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. Like a beautiful flow of loving light. Let's take another deep breath in and release a little deeper. Tuning into our own heart. Tuning into our gratitude. Feeling the love of spirit. As we become quiet on the inside, we are better able to listen to our higher self, to the voice of our inner guidance, to what our heart is calling us to. I invite you to breathe into this place of deep peace. And open to whatever spirit is telling you. And listen in the silence. What a blessing it is to be on this journey together. To know that we have within us whatever we need for our highest good, for our greatest joy. We have all the courage and faith and strength we need to leave our nets, if that is ours to do, and to step forward in faith. We give thanks for the light of God shining so brightly in each of us and in our lives and in our world. And we invite the opportunity to say, Spirit, use me. Show me the way. For all these blessings, we are grateful. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.